previous night.
Ladies and gentlemen, trans and non-binary punks of all ages and denominations, welcome back to another episode of Not Just a Phase. We are in season 4, so thank you for joining us and supporting us. If you're new here, just want to get this out of the way real quick with our plugs. We are online at notjustaphase.net. We're on Instagram and TikTok at Not Just a Phase Worldwide. Occasionally, we're on Twitter at NJAP Worldwide. And we have a Patreon with video podcasts and some bonus content if you want to help support the expansion of our podcast and the Blogspot and all the other great content we continue to create for you. A shout out to our video editing team at Blocko Media, who are the boys from Abdullah Lunar. Make sure to check them out and give them a follow as well. Elias is back on the microphone to co-host a very special episode today, and I'm going to end it with that and pass the mic along to him to introduce our guest.
Thanks, Rob. Today we are just beyond excited to welcome a very special guest. So existing as a form of both cacophonous yet ass-shaking affirmations of life, death, the grisly, and sweet, Blood Brothers made music that could save us all. Their brilliant swirling cocktail of loud meets dancey forms together to make a discography really unlike any other. And what a great fucking racket that these guys made. And as we are rapidly approaching a near sold-out run of reunion shows, we would like to come and dig into the band's history, as well as learn a bit more about our guest's journey leading up to now. So welcome to the show. Thanks so much for talking with us today. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And then for our listeners back home, would you mind giving us your name and introducing what you do in the band?
Yeah, I'm Johnny Whitney. I am one of the two singers of the Blood Brothers. The one, the annoying one, the one that people find annoying. That's me. hey, this is Johnny from the Blood Brothers. This song is Set Fire to Face on Fire, and you're listening to Not Just a Phase.
Fire!
I don't know if anyone finds that. Well, I mean, fans definitely don't find it annoying, but I think my grandma heard you guys when I was playing it once, and she was like, what's happening?
My grandmother, who's one of the most beloved people in my life, told me that it made her physically ill.
I mean, that's a response. So
yeah, my grandmother doesn't understand any of this music either, so that's hilarious. So I'm guessing you haven't done a podcast in quite some time. Am I wrong with that one?
I did a podcast, I want to say like 2017.
Oh, wow.
It's been, I mean, I haven't been doing much lately, so
So this is
it
the
would.
first one since you guys have announced anything?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
You guys are the first ones.
That is awesome.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an
That's
honor.
crazy. Yeah. Did you get a chance to listen to any of this podcast? Like, have you heard a full episode or anything like that?
No, I'm going to be honest. I haven't heard a full episode yet.
Okay, good.
No, but it's
Good.
good. No, we prefer that. Do
I
you
did
listen to any
notice. I
podcasts?
do I listen to
Like in
podcasts? Yeah,
general?
I listen to. Yeah,
Yeah.
I listen to podcasts like Chapo, Turn On, stuff like that.
Not familiar with them.
Chapo Trap House. You don't know the
Yeah.
Chapo?
Rob doesn't
Oh,
actually
whoa.
listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
He just makes one.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, well, I founded one technically, but yeah, I guess I make. So if we're doing an origin story, kind of like take it back to the first day, it's a pretty standard question, but I never get tired of hearing the answers. Do you re recall how you were first introduced to punk rock or any form of alternative music?
I do. I mean, I'm of the age where, you know, I think I was like in sixth or seventh grade when Nevermind came out, or maybe fifth grade, I don't know. And just like typical older brother of a friend had it. And like, yeah, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, those kind of bands. And growing up in Seattle, it was like that was just around. That's how I got was introduced to like, you know, I guess quote unquote alternative music. You know, I grew up at a really advantageous time to see live music in an all ages capacity. There was, I think, like three all ages venues. I grew up on the east side of Seattle, so like across Lake Washington in Kirkland, Washington. And there was, yeah, Old Firehouse in Redmond, Ground Zero in Bellevue. And then for a while, there was another place called Magic Studios in Bellevue. And like, any bands of like the early 90s punk rock, like hardcore milieu that were looking for all ages venues would go there. So like Fugazi played there. We're like one of the first big shows I ever played in any band was with Bikini Kill, like opening for Bikini Kill, right?
Oh
Like
shit.
so there, I mean Jawbreaker played there like a zillion times. Like I saw Unwound like 10 times. Like there it was just
God.
there was I didn't know how good I had it at the time because that was all I was used to, but it was really kind of unbelievable, the opportunity that me and you know, frankly, like people that are in the Blood Brothers now. I met Jordan when I was 11, and you know, we've just been hanging out and going to shows and stuff like that when we were in high school and middle school, and so it was just it was really easy, right? Like it was just, you know, every weekend something was happening,
Yeah.
$5 you could go to.
That's crazy.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, that sounds super fucking awesome. I can't imagine. I mean, I feel like you barely catch on one now because all their stuff sells out so fast. Can't imagine seeing it just 10 times.
I saw one. I mean, I saw Elliot Smith from like 35 people.
Holy
Like, really?
shit.
Like,
Oh,
jeez. That
fuck.
shit was
That's
just around
crazy.
all crazy. Like, I
Yeah.
remember hearing Miss Misery before it was recorded. Like, it was like it was just such a like visceral, intense moment, and then it came
Yeah.
out. It was like fucking
Damn,
crazy.
that's sick.
Yeah.
It's wild.
I know. That's man, that's so awesome. So outside of music, what other like hobbies and passions do you have?
Well, for the past like 13 years, I've been a software engineer. I work for Netflix. I've worked for Netflix for 10 years almost now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's a really, really great place to work. So that keeps me busy most of the time. I also, you know, I have children, so that keeps me busy for the rest of the time. What I like to do, I mean, right now this year, all I've been doing is practicing and trying to get ready for these
Right.
shows. Because it's been, I mean, I have not really since we had our last set of reunion shows, which was like much smaller
Right.
run in 2014. I haven't done shit since then. So, you know, it's been a process of trying to like get back into like performing shape. I mean, like
Yeah.
we toured so much when we were like a band, and when we were at home, we would practice like We tried to treat it like a 9-to-5 job because none of
Right.
we were fortunate enough not to like have to work while we were in the band. So we would practice like 5 days a week. So
Yeah.
like getting back into that kind of performing shape
Right.
was occupied quite a lot of time.
Yeah, I believe that. Actually, it was really interesting because I saw a post you made, I think, about relearning like specific consonants and vowels in certain words. And I'm like, that is just so fascinating, especially like, I don't know if you know much about the contemporary scene where kids kind of just scream. And there's not like, not to say that, you know, I'm sure eventually they develop their own techniques and stuff. It's just that, you know, they just want to create. So it just happens. But like the kind of like skill and artistry that comes with that. Like I know I've heard an interview before you talked about taking like vocal lessons. And so I was kind of curious if you could talk like a little bit more about like how you kind of get yourself, but like what does it look like getting back into like fighting shape for a tour?
Well, I'll make a small clarification. I wasn't relearning those lyrics. I literally never sang the right lyrics for Set Fire to the Firestorm. And I figured it was time. I mean, to be honest, like that, when we would write, generally, like me or Jordan would kind of just like, we would, like, while they were writing songs, we would kind of just sing along to what they were doing and sort of sing, you know, not really sing words. So like with that, I'm very comfortable doing that kind of thing, right? Like
Right.
I've played shows like when we were in other bands and stuff, we would write songs, and I would have not come up with lyrics and I would just fucking ad lib it, you know,
Yeah.
because I don't know, sometimes it almost sounds better, right? I don't
Yeah.
know. More,
Right.
it's more
Interesting.
spontaneous, it's less like contrived a little bit.
Okay.
But like my process for this tour, you know, it's been interesting. I don't know how interesting you'd find this, but like when we were a band and when I was a musician, like I like obsessively would do vocal scales. I took vocal training. Like I wanted to be like a really high performing singer. And that's not really what the Blood Brothers is, right? The Blood Brothers is like a thing, right? It's not
Right.
like Buckley is in the Blood Brothers. It's like the Blood Brothers. So like what I because I also have like limited time because of, you know, work and obligations. Like I something clicked that like I don't actually need to practice scales and I don't need to like have like an insane vocal range. I just literally need to be good at like 23 Blood Brothers songs. So all I've been doing to practice is I just run the set like by myself. Like we all live in different parts of the country now, so we
Yeah.
it's we're kind of saving a lot of our practicing before like right before the tour. Like we've had a couple practices so far, but mostly we're just getting ready on our own. So like you know, I just soundproof my bathroom so I can start practicing in there. But before
Nice.
that, I would just do it in my car. Like after the
Right.
kids go to bed, I would like drive out to the middle of nowhere and like run the set in my car, which is a bit harrowing and funny to think what would happen if, you know, when people walk by and they think that somebody's having like some sort of psychotic episode in their car.
Yeah.
Because I don't practice with music either. Like I literally just do it a cappella.
Right. I mean, classic though, you know.
Well, it's like you can hear it better, right?
Right.
And so, like I'm actually really excited to do these shows because I've been like getting ready that way. I feel like I am in way better shape than I was when we were actually a band and when we actually recorded any of the songs. Because I'm just more familiar with my voice just because the way I practice is I just like do the songs a cappella. So
Right.
yeah, that's been my process. There's like a huge YouTube community now of like how do you scream
Yeah.
properly that I dabbled in a little bit just to like, you know, like the thing that sucks being on tour is like when you lose your voice and like
Right.
because it's such a limited run, like I'm trying to be very cautious that like I do everything correctly and it, you know,
Right.
all works out. So
Okay, very cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure like coming back to it is like both really fun and a little harrowing because I know you've talked about losing your voice in tours on the
yeah.
past and like how much it sucks. But I think it sounds like you got your muscle up.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm
Yeah,
trying.
I don't know if you ever hear that old story about It's like one of my favorite stories about like Outkast, like before they went on like their big tour for Speaker Box. They would run stadiums while rapping the entire album,
Oh,
like front to
really?
back.
You mean like
Yeah.
run back and forth?
Like
Okay.
running, like they would train, like that's how they trained. And I'm like, that's the crazy, like, and so I'm just like picturing you like running like on a track, just like screaming.
No, that would be
No.
cool. I think I'd get arrested if I did that.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely not, you know.
I was gonna ask, does the full body come into play while you're practicing in the car? Is the whole performance with the vocals happening?
What do you mean?
Like the physical embodiment of like
Yeah. Am
just
I like rocking out in the car or
like
something?
holding on to
Yeah.
the steering wheel, just like gripping
Yeah.
it.
No, I'm literally just trying not to get noticed by anybody. But I don't do
Yeah.
that anymore. Like I said, I just soundproof my
Yeah,
so
yeah. No, that's, I'm
that's
sure that's
awesome.
a lot more useful and effective.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we always like to ask, I know you've been super busy like in time, but do you ever like go to shows? Like, do you ever like check out your local scene? Doesn't have to necessarily be like screamo music or punk or whatever. Just like, is there like local music
There's
that you're
a, I
like
mean,
super into?
I live in the Bay Area, so I
Right.
know there's a lot of stuff going on. I'm just not in a phase of my life where like I have a lot of free time to do stuff like that. I hope to someday, but
Yeah, totally valid. Kids go to college, that kind of thing.
not too far away.
Or they start babysitting each other, whichever comes first. Okay. No, that's totally valid. Are there any bands that like maybe from back in the day or even maybe that you've heard randomly recently that you'd like to give some love to? Because we're always, you know, we like to try to share out like music and there's so many bands out there. There's always someone who's getting a little overlooked. Like, is there any bands that you'd like to show love to?
I saw Botch, I don't know, like 6 months ago.
That was sick.
Fucking sick. I mean, they were literally like, dude, we saw, like, I feel like I saw them probably like 200 times when I was a teenager, right? Like, they were such a huge, like, piece of connective tissue and, like, the tapestry of everything that went on in
Yeah.
Seattle. And so that was fucking awesome to see them. I mean, like, it's in terms of, like, new bands I listen to, like, I mean, I guess. I mean, I'm sure these are bands that are getting love, but like Chatpile or like
Oh, yeah.
Candy, stuff like that. Some newer stuff that I'm into.
Yeah, those Candy albums are really crazy.
It's fucking awesome. They're so
Yeah,
good.
mildly terrifying, which is always really sick with music.
Yeah, definitely.
So kind of moving into like the band and like the universe of the band, right? And everything that entails, like you know, moving one's body is like almost impossible not to do, like when hearing a Blood Brothers track. You know, like sometimes, like even in the car, like I'll be driving and like I'll be doing my vocal runs, but I'll still be like pumping my chest a little bit, you know, getting into the groove because it's just so danceable. Like, you know, and at different points in like the band's run of records, you kind of lean into the danciness, you lean away from like really infectious melodies, like all that stuff. Like, did it just kind of happen where you were like, we want to make something groovier, like we just kind of want it to be more fun, or was it just like kind of like a point where you were kind of just making it and it came out like that?
I think it's kind of all those, honestly. I mean, if you look at like the progression of the records that we did, it got more and more sort of outside of the confines of like being just like a crazy, screamy hardcore band with each record. I mean, like starting with Crimes is when we sort of like really made an effort to try to branch out a little bit more. I think it's just also just a natural outflow of like what, we were into at the time. And just trying to, I mean, we were, but by the time we were writing Crimes, we had been a band for like 6 years already. So we wanted to, it was a natural thing when you like have chemistry with people and like you don't want to do the same thing over and over again. And like we've always loved dance music. Like we're like, I mean, I'm sure like shows with the records, but like we're a super we all have like a very eclectic array of different things that we like and listen to and wanted to bring to the table, and that that shows. And also like Mark and Morgan are like the fucking the best rhythm section, I think. Morgan is like, I mean, I listen to some of his bass lines now and like I can't even believe that I was in a band with somebody that is that talented. And so there's just like he has so much natural rhythm that he exudes and everything he does that it just kind of it really it wouldn't matter like what this kind of song what ended up like we were trying to do. Like he just has a he brings that to the music in a way that I feel like just livens everything up and like makes everything really like danceable and fun.
No, absolutely believe that. And like all of it, like because you guys all kind of come together, and then like there you could isolate a different part of like any of your songs actually, even like if you split you and Bill, like or you and Jordan down the middle, and there'd still be something to kind of feel like a little movement. So I mean, I want to give Morgan his flowers for sure, but I think like all of you guys just have this like natural melody in you that just seemed to come out. It was really cool. And like kind of touching on like the vocals, like and the writing more specifically, like there's like, you know, because like I don't know if this is gonna feel weird to hear, but like basically we've been listening to the Blood Brothers for like what, Rob, like 20 years. So it's like, you know,
Yeah.
one of those things where
Me too.
yeah, it feels like there's like a familiarity with the lyrics. And like I've always noticed that there's like such like a really like physicality to like the lyrics. Like there's a lot of talking about like touching, and like there's tenderness, and there's like grabbing and shaking, and like there's a lot of like undulation and like freneticness. Like other bands like write about like ephemeral, I don't know if I'm saying that right, I feel like ephemeral, thank you, stuff. But like when you're writing these kinds of things, was that also kind of like a natural thing that you were just in that headspace at the time, or was it like a really intended like kind of thing?
There wasn't any intentionality to make like a physicality to the lyrics, I don't think, though it may have come out that way. I always my approach to the lyrics was always just it was less about trying to say one kind of thing, but more to like express like a feeling or like sort of describe something visual or some like something conceptually interesting or you know, something like that, like the words actually sound interesting or like lively. So yeah, I mean, there's not like a, yeah, it wasn't an intentional thing for sure.
Yeah, okay. I mean, so our friend Dave had like Dave from Zegama Beach Records, shout out Dave, was asking us to ask you because he was telling us about this narrative that seems to exist where there's actually like a whole story for what was it, Rob? Burn Piano or like Piano Island, where like the island is like there's a personification for the island, like there's a personification for like other characters in like that album. Is that like, is there a narrative to that album that's like kind of hidden in a little bit of the subtext?
I mean, it's not like a the narrative is not like a direct narrative. It's more of just like, I mean, we would sort of like have self-referential things in our songs. And like the thing with the like Burn Piano Island Burn, like we had on our first record, we had a song called Marooned on Piano Island. And then for our major label record, we just thought it would be kind of like clever to have a song that was like, you know, another song about Piano Island. I feel like that song is it's like the everything bagel of Blood Brothers songs. It has every it's 3 minutes long, but it has like 18 different parts, and like somehow it's catchy, even though there's not like a direct chorus. It's just kind of like I don't know. And I only these are thoughts that I've had as I'm like rehearsing all the songs that I didn't like really realize at the time. But it's more just like trying to you know, it's like a template for trying to describe something that is really like fucked up beyond belief, right? And so like that what that song is sort of just it's like a travelogue of a horrifying place or
Oh,
something.
okay. Great. All right. Very cool. Well, there you go, Dave. So you better be listening to this episode.
Yeah, come on, Dave.
Yeah, come on, Dave. You know, so still kind of touching on the lyrics a little bit. There's a lot of you know, I clocked a lot of mention of love. Like I feel like love is just like in the air whenever the Blood Brothers are around. So I'm kind of wondering, I know you mentioned earlier that there wasn't like a specific intention with like how some of the lyrics kind of came about. Do you feel like you kind of were just like naturally drawn to that concept, like while writing in the band, or
I mean, all songs are kind of about love a little bit. I mean, love is, I don't know, not corny or whatever. I mean, it's like the whole point of being alive. And so it can't not be an expression. somehow. I will say that, like, I when I'm always like, I have this, like, I spent a lot of my life when I was younger basically just walking around Kirkland at night listening to music and like feeling this like really powerful feeling of like wonder and like completeness and like awe, sort of like Kirkland's like, I mean, it's kind of a shithole now because tech companies have taken it over, but like it when I was growing up, it was like really beautiful. Like, it's right on the lake. I was like 5 minutes from like Lake Washington my whole life. And like just the feeling of like being there at night listening to music, like I always kind of like tried to go back to that. Like, describing that feeling is kind of like a lot of what compelled me to like want to be a singer, because it was just, it's something that was like kind of like a moving target that I don't know if I'm explaining myself very well, but
No,
like it's not, it's like love in the sense of like inspiration and like awe and wonder. I would say definitely that's something that I always tried to bring to the lyrics.
yeah. I mean, there is like kind of a there is a certain amount of awe that comes with like hearing your music sometimes. So I think that mission accomplished,
All right,
largely.
thank you.
Yeah, but no, that's really wonderful. And I know a little bit about what you're talking about. My cousin has lived in Kenmore his entire life. I've been up there a few times. Yeah. So he's taken me to Lake Washington and we've hung out at night at the lake and just like stared at the stars.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm so fucking glad I don't live there anymore, but
Yeah.
it was a great place to grow up.
Ah, absolutely. I believe that. So I know we talked about it a little bit earlier, I think off the record, but your cover of Queen's Under Pressure is a legendary one. And anyone listening at home, if you don't know about it, the Blood Brothers covered Queen for a compilation called Dynamite Through Laser Beam, which had a bunch of Queen covers. I think like Das Oath was on there too, and like a lot of other really sick, like I think a bunch of 3-1-G bands were actually wound up being on that thing. Wait, did they put it out?
Was that?
Did 3-1-G put it out? I know I'm being a bad
Yeah, it was a
journalist right now.
3 specific record.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, so it's awesome and everyone should listen to it. But I was kind of wondering, was there like a debate as to like what Queen song would be covered, or were there other songs in contention that weren't like, that you guys have thought about covering as well?
I mean, the Queen song was kind of a slam dunk just because it's like a boy band with two singers. It's a song with two singers. It kind of works itself out, right? I don't, I guess it would have been cool to do Bohemian Rhapsody or something like that, but
Fuck.
there was literally no discussion whatsoever. We were just like, this is the song we're doing because, I'll be Freddie Mercury, you be David Bowie, done, right?
Incredible.
In terms of other songs we covered, we covered, I was really like, they get a bad rap now, but like I've always loved The Doors. And like a lot of the reason I came to the keyboard was because of Raymond Zarek. We covered 5 to 1 on a 7-inch, this was definitely out of print now, with Liars, a while back. We also covered like Anthrax by Gang of Four for like a was like as a part of like our record label that also came out. But like in terms of other covers, we have not, yeah, we weren't really like a band that liked to do cover. I mean, we didn't dislike it, but it just wasn't really part of our like natural inclination.
Yeah, doesn't really fit the framework of the band.
Yeah. And I mean, we toured off of like, I mean, we would regularly play Under Pressure for like the early days when we were touring. So kind of
Yeah.
already, we already had one locked and loaded.
Yeah, no. Makes sense. I mean, I hope that it makes an appearance at some of the shows at least, because
Yeah, I don't know.
that'd be
We're
pretty.
talking. Let's see.
Yes, I know it's
Yeah.
under discussion, so
Under discussion.
Yeah, I'm lobbying for it over
You're
here.
lobbying?
So I am lobbying. So
Okay.
we'll go out for a steak dinner when you're in town and
Yeah. Fair enough.
we'll slip like an envelope with like 3 grand cash for your fundraiser.
Yeah.
I had to bring it up because I'm sure that this video has changed so many people's brain chemistry, but your performance on the Henry Rollins show,
Oh, yeah.
just absolutely insane. I mean, could you like just tell us a little bit about that story, like how it happened, like what it was like?
It's
From what you
not that,
can,
I mean, it's not that interesting of a story. The more interesting story is like our Jimmy Kimmel one, which I can talk about if you want to hear about that.
Yeah, okay.
But the thing that's interesting about that is that I can't fucking believe it happened. And like I can't believe how nonchalant it was for me at the time to like be on Henry Rollins's show because he's such a icon. And it was like, when you're in the mix and you're like doing press and you're like on tour and doing stuff all the time, like it doesn't really it's hard to like really sit back and like think about what's going on and like really appreciate like that what's happening is happening. So it was pretty ordinary at the time, but like looking back on it, it's like, damn, that's crazy. It's crazy that we were able to do that. It's because I met Henry Rollins. Not something that I ever thought I would do when
Right.
we started, right? Same with like, I mean, Guy Picciotto like produced our last record. Like I would have, if I could go back and tell myself that as like a 14-year-old, I would have lost my mind. Probably.
Yeah.
But it was pretty, I mean, we just went to, it was like a studio in like Koreatown, I think. Like we just went and recorded, met him, and that was pretty much it.
That's so wild to me because it's such like I guess you guys were just like really tight at that time because it
Yeah, we had
sounds
time.
like Mark strumming on and during that set sounds like the building's gonna collapse. Like it's
He's an animal.
insane.
He's a fucking animal.
Like now you all were just like on a good one. Like that I sent that video to Rob the other day and I was like, we should watch this again to like prime ourselves because it's such an insane video. But
It was in the middle of, I mean, we had been touring forever when we did that, so
yeah.
we were just like, it was just right.
Fucking locked in and but yeah, I'm interested to hear the Kimmel story because
Yeah,
that's
so
conceptually insane, but you know.
it is literally insane. Yeah, so I mean, these things come about where it's like, you have a publicist, they submit you to a bunch of different stuff, and then somebody bites, right? So the thing with Crimes was we like there's a running thread in our band of us like kind of being very passive and letting people like, even though we're like extremely opinionated internally and like writing songs was sometimes like a really huge emotional undertaking because everybody had, it was like putting something through the fucking gauntlet, right? With our business decisions, we really let other people like decide things for us way more than like looking back on it now, I would even remotely be comfortable with. So I'm taking this way back. So
Right.
like when we released Crimes, we were like, oh, Trash Flavor Trash is like, if we do a single or a video, like that's got to be the one. This is like, this song is like a, it's like catchy, it's short, it's like, feels good.
Punchy. Yeah.
Yeah. And when we got a budget to do a music video, we did it with a friend of ours, his name's Mike Ott. He actually put out like our first couple records, like This Adultery Is Right, the first one, right? I think he did actually. Maybe I'm wrong. Damn, put a pin in that. If I don't know,
Okay.
I'm truly stupid. Anyway, so he's a film makes films, right? And so he was gonna do our video, and he convinced us that Love Rhymes was actually the single, and so
Okay.
that's why we have a video for Love Rhymes and not Trash Flavor Trash.
Right.
So fast forward a year later, record comes out, we're doing promotion for it, we get the opportunity to do Jimmy Kimmel. Our publicist pitched them on Love Rhymes, which is like a much more song that would be on Jimmy Kimmel kind of Blood Brothers song than Trash Flavor
Yeah.
Trash, right? But nobody told us that that was the agreement, and
Oh.
we were going to play Trash Flavor Trash, right? So we got there, we set up all our gear, ran through Trash Flavor Trash, and like the people who are in charge were like, hey, that's not the song that we agreed to have on Jimmy Kimmel. And could you please play Love Rhymes with Hedy Skaarek? To be honest, like I was kind of like, maybe we should do it because I guess I'm at the time was a bigger pushover than the rest of the band. But like, rest of the band was like, no, fuck no, we're gonna play what we want to play. You're not gonna tell us what to play. And they were like, okay, well, you're probably never coming back to Jimmy Kimmel then, if that's what's going to happen. And
Oh
like,
no.
it's probably gonna be hard for you to be on any kind of show like this. Like, we all talk, right? But go ahead, what you want to do. And so we played it, and it was like, it was whatever. I actually really hate that. Like, I feel like that performance is not, it doesn't sound like, it sounds horrible.
They probably mixed you terribly on purpose.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. And so, yeah, so we played it, and they were like, whatever about it. And Jimmy Kimmel came up to me afterwards, shook my hand, and said, "Do you guys play bar mitzvahs?" Which I thought was. And that was, dude, it was like, I was relaying this story to somebody the other day, and then I totally memory hold that, like, I had set up a Neon Blonde show. I did this like other band with Mark called Neon Blonde the
Right.
same night. So like, I wasn't even
Oh.
like, my headspace was like I played guitar all my life, right? But I'm like really deeply uncomfortable playing guitar in front of people. And so I had been practicing for like 4 months every day for like a couple Neon Blonde shows that we were gonna play. One of them was the night of the Jimmy Kimmel taping. So like, but I wasn't even thinking about the fact that we were going to be on TV. Like, I was really, really freaked out about having to play at Cinerama, like down the street in front of 45 people with Neon Blonde. So
After being
yeah,
on national television.
after being on TV, which is like the thing, it's funny because it's like, I met my wife when I was 17. I've been with her for like over 20 years.
That's awesome.
It was the first time that I feel like her family ever really was like, "Oh, this is kind of cool that he does this," and not like, "This is a big loser that's my daughter's with."
Right. Oh, this
Like,
is a real thing that
right. So it was good for that kind of
Right.
in-law credibility, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's valid and that makes sense. Damn, it's a shame you guys couldn't get more late night spots. I'm sure you would have killed it on Letterman, or maybe you could have been Conan's house band. Who knows?
Oof. That would be nice. Yeah.
Well, since we were on about you playing guitar, I was going to ask, is there anything coming out more acoustic work? Because I'm truly a sucker for anything acoustic. So
Yeah.
any chance of that?
That was kind of like, I don't know, maybe, probably not.
Okay.
That came about, so like when Jagger Love broke up, or like, we didn't really ever break up. We just kind of like, we're like, we need to do something that makes money and not be poor all the time. And so let's take a break. I kind of went through this phase in my life where I was just like, okay, I'm about to stop playing music for a really long time. So I want to get everything out of my system that I've ever wanted to do and not like give myself a chance to. Like, I'm assuming you're talking about the acoustic thing I put out. Like, those were all songs that I literally had been just like, I had written over like 15 years, and that I didn't really have a anything for them to like be for, but I felt like they should like exist somewhere for people to listen to. So it's kind of like, just for the purposes of that, I don't really write songs on acoustic guitar anymore, but I don't know. Maybe I will someday. Who knows? I think that, I mean, I've been playing piano a shitload to get ready for these shows. So I think if I ever do anything that's like in that realm again, it'll probably just be like piano songs.
That would also be very cool.
Really, really. So, but we'll see. I don't know. It feels like a waste to like just do these shows. I'm like in the best like performing shape I've been in my, probably my life. So like, the thing I keep thinking of is like, man, it sucks we're only doing like 20 shows, and then I'm just gonna go back to not doing this anymore. That seems,
Right.
I don't know, we'll see.
Well, I'm jumping all over the place here, but it's rare to find a band with two like main vocalists. Sometimes you have your front man and then like backup vocalists. Do you have a specific band that you favor that has two or more vocalists? Or did any bands with two vocalists inspire the Blood Brothers?
No, we straight up ripped off the idea from a band
Nice.
called Area 51 that was in Seattle. They'd broken up by the time we had started the band, but it's Andrea Zolo, who's what is in Pretty Girls Make Graves now. She was one of the singers. And then Spencer Moody, who was a singer of Murder City Devils. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They were like a big band in Seattle. And it was like them. And then, like, there's like a billion crust punk bands that we all liked and listened to that had two singers. And the thing that's funny about our band is like we didn't like when we because we grew up in this place where there was like something to work towards, right? Like we had all these all ages music venues that we could play at if we, if we started a band and got good at. We were all in like three different bands for all of junior high and high school. And the Blood Brothers was a band that we started basically just for fun. Like we took all the other bands we were in very fucking seriously, like and really probably to their detriment, like cared about it a lot. And when we started the Blood Brothers, it was more like, okay, let's just do a band where we're just like blowing off steam, or like not blowing off steam, but like let's just do something that's fun. Like we're into like all like like power violence, hardcore, crust punk bands. Like we started off like kind of wanting to be like that kind of band, and like if there's exists on tapes that I have, but we never released any of this music. Like a lot of our earlier stuff was like, 45 second to 1 minute songs that were just like crazy power violence crap stuff. And like so that's why, I mean, like we're like, okay, well, let's just have it'll be crazy. We'll have a band with two singers. We're still doing all these other things. So it's like, but I think that like having a platform where we were like doing something that we weren't taking really, really, really seriously, it's kind of part of the magic and kind of like what made the band into what it was. And instantly when we started the band, like I'm not exaggerating. Like all the other music we were in, I guess with the exception of like Cody was in this band called Waxwing with his brother Rocky, which was actually like quite big. But like all the other bands we were in, like people liked it, but it wasn't like a thing that like people we didn't know would come to. Within like three shows of starting the Blood Brothers, like it just became this weird phenomenon where people would come and like dance and have fun, and it was crazy and nuts. And there was like really not, it just kind of all came together. And like sometimes that's just how life works, right? Like the thing that you don't think as much about, and you don't like put as much like, trying to force something to be like amazing, like when you just like let things happen, sometimes that works out better. And that's definitely how we can't, I mean, you asked about the two singers. That's the impetus of this question, but that's like we didn't. If we were like we're gonna start a band that's gonna be on a major label and like we're gonna tour all over the world, and it's gonna be our lives until we're like in our 30s, we wouldn't have done that. We would have like made choices that probably made those things not happen. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah, I get that. I started this podcast as half a joke for a hobby during the
Yeah.
pandemic. And 4 years later, I'm sitting here talking to you. I don't know how the fuck that happened, but
Magic.
just crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. So in terms of the genre name for SaaS, I was curious, like for a loose definition, I guess it'd be like spastic, dance-worthy version of screamo or post-hardcore. And history says that it was kind of like a pushback against the machoism of hardcore. Did you ever feel that way? And was like any of this intentional that you guys came across that way?
I mean, I guess if I go back and think about it, maybe a little bit, like we still listened to all that kind of music when we were starting the band. I chalk it up more to like, I mean, the first people that ever made me want to be a singer were like Mick Jagger and David Bowie. And so like that, it wasn't really a reaction as much to like the existence of Earth Crisis or something like that, right? Like it's more just like that was just sort of my template for like what if I ever wanted to do these are like the people that I look up to. Is kind of corny, but like this is the first time I ever thought like, well, this is gonna be kind of cool, was like listening to David Bowie. And so that's more, it's definitely like more of an effeminate approach to like having its stage persona.
Right.
The band I've listened to the most this year is Hatebreed, so I definitely am not
All right.
most
Avery.
all
Jamie
right.
Jazz Nation, rise up.
Did not expect that one.
Why?
So with
Why not?
well, yeah, I don't know. With you guys going back on tour, if you want to take a trip down memory lane, can you think of like one of the best moments on tour or one of your worst moments, whichever sticks out more?
I can think of a lot of worse moments.
Yeah.
I mean, I think like there's a, I mean, if you want to like pick something that's like you can make a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode out of. We one time we played in El Paso, Texas, as we were on tour with Mile Marker.
That's sick.
Probably like 2003, maybe. And we it was the first time we'd ever been to El Paso. And it was at a like they would have these things out in the desert in El Paso that were like drag races where you bring your own shitty car and race other people with shitty cars in the middle of the desert. And for whatever reason, they wanted to have a live music component to it. And for whatever reason, they thought that we would be the ones that would do that well. So they set us up in the middle of the desert on the back of a flatbed semi truck, and we played for, I mean, like roughly 15 really excited people, and then drag racing happening in the background. I think also it's like we played thousands of shows. The worst shows are always the ones where it's like, why am I here?
Right.
Like
Yes.
I'm,
Yes.
it's like and but I'll caveat that by saying like a lot of times we'll play like I don't want to shit on Idaho, right? But like Idaho, if you live in Seattle and you're a band that goes on tour, you fucking have to play Idaho because you
Right.
have to get to Denver, right? Just an example, like when you play these like small towns and it's like it feels like you drove like 8 hours to come and play for like 15 people. Setting up everything up to the point where you play, like at least for me as like a self-hating narcissist, makes me think like this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I hate my life. I hate doing this. And then you get up and play for like 15 people that are so gratified that you came to their town and like can't believe that you would, take the time to like be there. That sometimes is really great. And it like sometimes feels almost better than like playing to a big sold out crowd sometimes. So those are the bad ones, right? We opened for Metallica once in Portugal.
Oh shit. I
It
did
was a
not
bad,
expect that. Okay.
yeah, it was fucking awesome. I mean, it was like it was Metallica, Mastodon, and us in Lisbon.
How did their fans react to the
Sick.
Blood Brothers? I can imagine not well. Okay. Yeah.
I'll get to that. Right. So,
Okay.
yeah. So like we were setting up, and at the time, like my hair was like platinum blonde, and dressed somewhat effeminate, came out on stage to like a festival audience, and immediately a lot of people started catcalling me, because I thought it was a girl. And so, I was like, oh, this is gonna be interesting, right? And so
Yeah.
then immediately it was like, as soon as I said something into the mic in a male voice, it was just like immediate visceral hate pointed at us, like screaming whatever the F slur is in Portuguese. Like
Yeah.
people fucking hated us, right? And I mean that's to be expected. Like we always had a hard time opening for like bigger, more mainstream acts because like we're not for everybody, right? And if you don't have like a reference point for the kind of music that we do, I understand if it's off-putting, right? But yeah, so they fucking hated us. It was fun, but somewhat humiliating. And then I was taking a taxi back to my hotel after we played, and the taxi driver was like listening to the radio in Portuguese, and also like in, I feel like it felt like the Pope was in town or something like that. Like there were, like it felt like the entire city of Lisbon was in this festival. Like stores were closed, streets were shut down. There was
Right.
like a holiday. Like it was, there
Right.
was so
It's
much. They were
Metallica,
so
so.
excited to see Metallica, right? So like I'm taking this taxi back to my hotel, and so I hear like blah 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 blah. You know, the dude's listening to the radio. In the taxi, and he's like blah 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 blah, shit in Portuguese, shit in Portuguese, shit in Portuguese, and then I hear very clearly blah 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 blah, the Blood Brothers, blah 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 blah, and so I'm like, oh hey, this is the texture. I'm like, hey, oh that's a band that I'm in. What did they what they say about us? And he's like, you don't want to know.
Oh, shit.
Fair enough.
Nah.
But I don't want to give the impression that all of our shows were bad, or like I
No, of
mean,
course.
those are like a these are the ones that stick out.
Right.
I think some of the best shows. What are some of the best ones we've ever played? There was like I don't know. There's so many. It's hard to pick one. I mean, like
Right.
bad shows stick out more than good shows, but like you
Oh, of
know.
course. Is there maybe a show that you were like, this lineup's actually kind of crazy, like either then or like looking back now, where like you got to play, like let's say like maybe it was with like Botch,
Yeah,
or
I mean,
like
I
some
feel like
other
the
insane Seattle band.
yeah, like the Oops Tour. We did the Oops Tour in like 2002, which was Locust, Erebon Radar, Lightning Bolt. This band, I don't know if you've ever heard of. There's a
Fuck.
band, Get Hustle, that's like
Yeah.
fucking incredible.
Oh,
Never,
yeah.
never, never got the recognition they deserve. They're amazing. And us, we opened the tour,
Same.
and I can't even believe that that happened. Looking back now, I mean, it's wild.
Yeah, kids would
The
go nuts
whole,
for that now.
yeah, it was awesome. I mean, the Locust, it's hard to like, it's really hard. Like, there's not, I mean, I don't have my ear to the street, right? But like, it seems like there has not been something as just like that wildly changed what everybody was doing as musicians as the Locust when they first started, like back in like when they first started getting really big in like 99 or 2000. I remember like it was just the first tour we ever went on, like with actually Red Scare, or who was on your guys'
Hell
podcast,
yeah.
and Orchid. It was like I felt like, well, it was the first time for me ever like doing a tour across the country. A lot of the shows were like house shows, basement shows, and stuff like that. And it was right when I feel like everybody was like the Locust was really breaking through a lot. And it was really interesting to clock how many bands kind of seemed like they had just like changed their whole identity to sound like the Locust, or to like have like a, you know, a Roland and like a, you know, in their crazy hardcore band.
Right.
Yeah. I don't feel like I have not witnessed anything where it's like a band has like just changed what everybody wanted to do like within the span of a year is like when that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think of a real contemporary example. Maybe Tidal Fight, but I think that they were a little bit more of a latent, like now every band is a shoegaze band.
Yeah.
So like it's one of those things. But yeah, no, nothing quite. That was like when the Locust came out, that was like an atomic bomb going off. People were like, oh, you can do that?
Yeah, no, it was awesome. It was like incredible.
Yeah. I felt the same way when I listened to you guys for the first time. I was like, what the fuck is happening here? Like,
Oh, for sure.
I didn't know people could sound like that. Like, that's so sick.
Get on me, boys! Get on me, girls!
Is there a band that you never got to play with that you'd like really love to have shared the stage with, or maybe even have the chance to now?
I mean, like one band that I always kick myself. I was like, I think I had just had a shift at my shitty grocery store job in 11th grade when they played Seattle. But the VSS, I don't know if you've ever heard them. They were like a GSL band. They were also like one of the first bands to ever really do synthesizers in, or like the like what not the first. But like the first bands to like reintroduce that into like hardcore music. They weren't really hardcore. They were like there's like nothing that sounds like them. They're a little bit, they sound a little bit like The Faint, I guess, but not like
Okay.
as I would, and they only existed for like a couple of years. Have you heard the band Angel Hair? They're
Yes.
like, so the Angel Hair turned into the VSS after they
Oh,
broke up.
sick.
You should check it out when you get done with this podcast. They're
All right.
fun. That's one band that I always wish that I had seen slash that we had toured with for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, there you So, all right. Yeah, that kind of answers two questions then. Oh, all right. So now we're getting to the good stuff. We're winding down the pot a little bit, so I'm gonna let Rob do his thing.
Okay. Well, I was gonna ask quickly before we got into my stupid questions there. Is there a
They're not
band, like
stupid.
everyone's been doing reunion shows, obviously. You guys are currently doing it. Is there a band that hasn't done a reunion show yet that you're still waiting to do it that you'd love to see? Because I don't know. Aside of the band you just mentioned, Elias.
I'm putting it on the spot right now. Actually, they never come to where I am, and they don't play that often, but I would love to see Rocket from the Crypt again.
Oh.
I love Rocket from the Crypt. They're such a great live band. I feel like that's another band that like they made amazing records, and they're a little bit lost to history a little bit now. I would love to see the Murder City Devils again. Like they were fucking so amazing live. All the I probably saw them like 100 times too growing up. Like just such a fun like live show to be at. Like kind of scary but kind of fun at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'd say.
That's good answers.
All right. I got a couple of questions I always like to ask our guests near the end of the interview. I'm trying to ask questions you probably haven't been asked before in an interview. One of the sillier questions I ask is, what's the most dangerous or illegal thing that you've ever done in your life that you're willing to put on a very public podcast. So don't incriminate yourself. You can use metaphors if you need to.
I think the statute of limitations is passed on this, probably,
Sick.
but
Let's get it.
I did acid when I was 14 in math class.
Shit.
In math class.
In math
It
class.
hit in math class, or you dropped it when you were in math class?
I think probably right before.
Wow. Okay.
I got suspended from school for it because I did it with somebody that freaked out and called their parents.
Oh, sick.
I've been
Well,
trying to buy acid from like random dirt bags in junior high for a really long time and kept getting sold things that weren't acid. Part of the nonchalantness of like taking it right before math class was thinking that it wasn't really acid.
Okay.
So that's but I mean I was punished for that. I certainly could have been. I think if I did that now, they probably would have like tried me as an adult or something like that, or I would have been expelled. But I just got suspended for a week. Jordan did too. It was
That's really funny.
such
Yeah, I
a
don't think
scary
you
story.
should go do acid in a high school math class right now. I don't think that's a good idea.
Wasn't even high school, it was junior high.
Oh, junior high. Okay, shit. Wow.
Was before I had
Okay.
gone through even. It was good times.
Damn. Did like all the math start making a lot more sense, but then too much sense?
On four
Right.
dimensions or
Just like
something.
rewriting the Fibonacci sequence just randomly.
I have no idea what that is. Awesome. That's how bad I am at math. Acid could not help me. Nothing could save me with my math.
One, three, no.
Let's assume you're not a pacifist, although you might be for all I know. But assuming you're not a pacifist, if you could punch any one person in the face as hard as you can with no repercussions, who would you punch and why?
It's got to be Joe Biden at this point.
Oh, that was so quick. Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Valid.
Yeah.
Very valid.
I mean, primarily for, turning children into human spaghetti in Palestine for the past year, but
Yeah.
other things.
God damn.
I'm
Sick.
not a threat either. Not a threat. Not something I'm going to do, but
No, a hypothetical, completely. So get off our
scenario.
back, Homeland Security. I'm surprised we haven't gotten any phone calls, but
I appreciate that they listen to us, though. Anyone who's listening, I appreciate. I don't care what
yeah.
they do,
To our
at the
FBI
end of the
agent,
day.
thank you.
Yes.
Make sure to like, follow, and subscribe.
Oh my God. I'm so glad we don't do that. I hate that shit.
I'll make our FBI agent do it.
All right. Well, what do you listen to that could be considered a guilty pleasure? And if you don't believe in guilty pleasures, what do you listen to that we definitely wouldn't expect you to be listening to? Like when you said that you've been listening to Hatebreed a lot this year, would not have been my first guess.
I mean, I listen to a lot of like reggae and dancehall music.
Sick.
That's
Okay.
probably something. I don't think that's a guilty pleasure either, because I think it's awesome. But I listen to everything from like, like 80s sort of like dancehall music to like more contemporary stuff like SZA and stuff like that. I don't know. I listen to all kinds of music, but that would probably be the one that you would expect the least, I would think.
There any like cringy pop stars you're listening to? Did you have a brat summer?
No, I've always loved Charli
I
XCX.
can't believe you just fucking asked that, dude.
I haven't even heard the album. I don't even know who the artist is, but it's
No,
topical. It's topical.
I
I hate
like
you.
I yeah I like Charli XCX, but I've liked her for a long time.
Okay.
I'm
Before it
not
was a brat summer?
before Brat Summer was a thing. I was a
Pre-brat summer?
pop music that's I'm trying to think.
I mean, you must have like had a crush on Cyndi Lauper at some point, right?
I listened to Cyndi Lauper a lot when I was little. Yeah, I think it was like the one piece of like 80s culture that my parents actually like absorbed
She had a
was
hold on people.
she did. She was awesome.
Yeah.
I can't think of any. I mean, I don't consider. I don't like. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I don't know. Nothing comes to mind.
That's fair. I mean, I wouldn't have really super pegged you for a dance hall guy, but that also kind of makes sense because, you know, dancing is love, dancing
Dancing.
is life, and all that. I think
True.
Billy from Seisha
True.
is like a huge into like jungle and like old like
Oh, yeah.
reggae remixes and stuff. So, you know, it the God, what was it? The screamo to EDM pipeline is very real.
Oh, I hate that so much.
Tough luck,
I just,
kid. I got
I
super
just
into
hate
house music
EDM.
during the pandemic, so
Oh,
it's so real.
I'm so
Dude,
sorry to hear that. All right.
it's sick, man.
Whatever floats your boat, you know, that's cool. That's cool. Dialing out of the silliness to a very random question, going to do a complete 180 here. If you could give the entire world a gift, what would it be and why? Doesn't have to be a material possession either. Could give the world a gift. Do you want a serious question or a serious answer or a silly answer?
It
It
doesn't matter. How what is the what
doesn't
is what's the mood striking you as right now?
matter. Yeah, really. Well, I mean, I don't fucking know, dude. I don't want to be a cornball.
No, trust me, the corniest answers are the best ones a lot of the time.
And we've had plenty of corn answers that are still, it's from the
Yeah.
heart. You
Yeah.
feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I'm gonna be super honest, I mean, I think that one of the for me, one of the most transformational things that I didn't was not on my radar as an adult is just having a family and having kids and having that the mental change that at least I went through when me and my wife started having kids was it just I remember the first time I ever saw my daughter. It was like, oh, everything kind of clicked and made sense for me. It was like, oh, I would rip someone's head off for this thing. And I've never felt that way about another person, really. And it just really clarifies that you don't really matter, and the things that you think are important don't matter at all. And I like obviously having kids is for everybody, right? But that was I think if everybody went through some kind of transformative experience like that, it would be better for everybody because it's good to not always think about yourself all the time. And being a musician, that's kind of part of the deal, right? You're literally, it's a very self-focused thing to spend your life doing, especially as a singer, where it's like you're everything that you do and everything that you think and everything that comes to you goes into this pool of things that you can at some point pull from and make art out of it. So it's a profession that lends itself to being self-absorbed, I think by design, because you kind of have to be a little bit self-absorbed to think that your life is that interesting. And for me, when we started having kids, it was like, oh, you know, I now I have another thing to put all of this energy into that's arguably a lot more constructive. That's the corny answer. The good answer or funny answer, I don't know. I think that one of the most pure, objectively fun pieces of joy that I ever experienced in my whole life was going from not having a Nintendo to having a Nintendo. That
All
delta,
right.
I'm going in a totally different direction now.
Such a
Essentials.
essentials. We get that one every now and again. The consoles are
Well,
big.
it's okay, I'm older than most people, right? And so there was a point in my life where my only interfacing with video games was go to Round Table Pizza and play until you run out of quarters, right? The idea, the fucking idea that you could bring that into your house, when I heard about it, it was like seeing God. I mean, it was like the most incredible, unbelievable thing, right? And then getting it was just, I don't know, especially growing up in Seattle, you can't fucking go outside. The place is a shithole. It's horrible to live there, kind of, right? I mean, it rains all the time. It gets dark at 3 o'clock in the
Shout out
afternoon.
Seattle.
So
You didn't say anything untrue.
I didn't you can't you don't have an outside life. Hard to It's hard to do a lot of the things that you do as a child, or go outside, ride your bike, go fucking play in the woods, whatever, because the weather sucks ass. So having a Nintendo was a big vibe enhancer for that. So yeah, I mean, just that feeling. Like, I haven't felt that feeling of like something so unbelievable that you think could never, like, this kind of comfort, right? That seems like out of reach, beyond imagination. Like, you get it. It's such a good feeling.
Yeah,
So,
I mean,
pun
that tracks.
intended, it was a game changer.
Oh.
Yeah.
You needed to cut
I
that.
got the
I'm gonna
I had
turn off my mic now.
gun. I got the came with like a pad that you could run on and play like
Ah,
some
sick.
Olympic games.
Yeah.
Original Mario, original Zelda, original Metroid, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Amazing.
No, I remember when my cousin first got a Nintendo and we went and played Mario. It was like, I was like 4 or 5. I was like, oh, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Emulators are crazy now too. I don't know if you've seen that stuff where you can, all you need is like a $200 laptop and you can have almost any
Yeah.
console you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad. It doesn't bring me the same kind of joy anymore, though. I don't, I've
Yeah.
tried it back. I tried it in the pandemic. I'm like, well, I'm gonna play Metroid again. It was like
Yeah.
50. This is, I don't, I got shit to do, man. I can't do
Yeah,
this.
no, that's fair. After a certain point, I'm sure that you can't go all the way back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Unfortunately.
those were great answers.
I can't. Yeah, two answers
So
we haven't gotten before either. yeah.
We've
Yeah.
had the console, but that was to give everybody like an Xbox or something. You really went into detail with that.
Old
Yeah.
school.
Yeah. Yeah. Those were really great. So kind of moving into the winding down period, we want to ask if there's like stuff that may be coming up for the band, like outside of just the reunion tours. I mean, I know that's like the primary goal right now, but it is like the main thing with the band right now. Just like, we want to get through these tours, we want to have a good time, and then that's kind of it. Or can we hope for like maybe a little bit more from the Blood Brothers in like the coming years?
Yeah, I mean, nothing, we got nothing planned right now. Never say never. The response to these shows has been wildly more enthusiastic than we had planned. To be honest, like this whole thing came about because like I said, I work at Netflix. I'm in the Bay Area, but I go down to LA a couple times a year for work.
Yeah.
And so Jordan and Cody live there. Starting about like 5 years ago, whenever I'd go down there, we would just get drinks and hang out. And like, it really, like, I just, those guys are so, I mean, they're like family to me. We've spent so much of our lives together. And it's really hard now that we live in different parts of the country and we don't have a thing that we all do together. It's hard to like stay connected to them. So for me, like, one of the reasons I really wanted to do this was like, I just want to like have a way to like spend some time with these guys again and like
Yeah.
reconnect with them and like just hang out. We'll see if there's anything else. I mean, like, we all want to go to Europe, like, because
Yeah.
that's fucking real. It's like going on vacation, kind of.
Right.
Whether or
Yeah.
not we'll be able to pull that off, I don't know. We all have like day jobs and stuff like that. We have
No,
to
of
like
course.
worry about, like, I'm fortunate. Like, Netflix is they're very good about like work-life balance. Everybody that I work with is very supportive of me doing this.
That's awesome.
I can't, like, I don't know to the extent that like it keeps going that'll be the case, but like, we'll see. I mean, if the
Yeah.
shows are amazing and like we all want to do it, maybe. But as of now, we don't have any plans other than just do these and do have it be amazing and fun.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, that's great. I mean, it's kind of like get the guys together to go on a fishing trip, except it's a little different because of y'all's background and history, so that makes sense.
Weird analogy, dude.
I mean, you know what? I don't know many people in the screamo scene who go on fishing trips. This is like the equivalent of that, basically. So it is a strange analogy, though. And I don't know if you actually like fishing or not, but
I have no opinion of it.
that's
I've
totally valid.
but yeah,
Yeah.
I don't do it anymore. It's more like, I mean, I'm not like, this is not stealing valor, right? But it is kind of like, when you're like in a band that tours all the time, you're removed from society in a way that like there's not like a lot of other analogs other than like people that are like in the army or like you know obviously I'm not comparing it to that because it's not the same thing, but like just you sacrifice having any kind of career, having any kind of like college, having like real relationships outside of the group of people that you're with and like randos that you meet in Oklahoma or like wherever the fuck you are, right? So it's like a bond that doesn't I don't have with anybody else, and like I don't see other people having with other people that aren't like also in bands. Especially when it's like a band where you know we didn't meet as adults, we met as like children. So we've been in each other's lives forever, and in a way that's like different than other relationships.
No, totally. Absolutely makes sense.
Yeah.
And I know that obviously like a lot of movement and stuff can be make ties hard to keep and stuff, but is there any like place, like any show that you're excited about like going back and maybe reconnecting with like old friends or just like seeing a city you haven't been to in a while again?
I'm excited to go back to the East Coast. I haven't been to the East Coast in a really long time. I'm excited to go to New York. I haven't been to New York in like 13 years or something like that.
Oh, nice.
I am like just kind of excited broadly though. I mean, there's not really I'm excited for it to start. I'm trying not to have any expectations about like what it's gonna be like or how it's gonna feel or like what's gonna be good or bad. Like I'm just really trying to focus on like making sure that it doesn't suck right now. Everything else will kind of just happen, I think. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, Johnny, thank you so much for
Yeah.
coming on. We appreciate you
Yes.
taking time out of your very busy schedule. This is typically the space in the podcast where there's any causes you want to speak on, any shout outs you want to give, any plugs you want to give, tell people where to follow you if you're into that kind of thing,
Yeah.
or it's almost coming up. This is your room to do so.
Sure. I mean, I'll plug our Instagram, which I don't know the handle of. I think it's just the Blood Brothers Band or something like that. You can
Blood
find it.
Brothers Band, yes.
Blood Brothers
At
Band.
the Blood Brothers Band.
I sometimes am on Twitter at Johnny Whitney is my handle. Yeah, that's where you can find us. You can find us on tour if you are in San Francisco, we still have tickets for sale. I believe there's one show in Brooklyn that still has tickets for sale, and one show in Chicago. Other than that, unfortunately, it's all sold out.
All resellers, guys, gotta buy in to the resellers, unfortunately, but worth it.
Yeah.
All right, very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, and we
Yeah.
hope you
Thanks
have
for
a great
having me.
rest of your day. Yeah, definitely, and hopefully we'll catch you at some of these shows soon.
Awesome. See you there.
Child bearing hips. Yeah.